Goldie and Tausch live from University Ridge for the Legends Golf Outing as we celebrate the latest Hall of Fame class.
I don't know why you're looking at me like that.
That was a pretty dirty look.
What was that look about?
Yeah, I don't know.
There's no look.
Felt like a look.
Listen to this resume. You want to play blind resume?
Yeah, let's do it.
First team All-Pro.
Okay. Joe Thomas.
Two-time second-team All-Pro.
Okay.
Five-time Pro Bowler.
Baller.
Pro Football Writers of America, that's us.
Nah, nobody cares about that.
All-Rookie team.
Nah, nobody cares. Okay, continue.
First-team All-Big Ten.
Okay.
First-team All-American.
Dang.
Second-team All-Big Ten. I don't know what happened there. George Halas Award, I don't even know what that is. What is that?
It's success in the face of adversity.
Oh. It's all about overcoming adversity. It is Travis Frederick on Wilde and Tausch. That is a damn good resume, sir.
Thank you. The second team Big Ten really throws it off there. Huh?
Who was first team?
I don't know. It was like my sophomore year, I think.
Oh. Yes, 2011.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
How's retirement? Because not everybody segues into retirement as easily as Tausch has.
He works a heck of a lot harder than I do.
Yeah, it's been busy.
It's a low bar.
It's been busy. I would say I work more now than I did then. It's just different hours and different expectations. You get a little bit more flexibility in the business world than you did when you were playing football. But it's been busy. I started a software company when I first came out. I did it my last year in the league, so I doubled up. And then I recently have sold that company and started a new one. So,
wow, you are busier
than
Tausch.
I'm a glutton for punishment is what
so,
I am.
So I think you're a really good example of this, and I'm curious if this theory that I have is true. A lot of offensive linemen, like this old guy here, mm-hmm. they're always trying to get one more year in, right? I mean, you played with Raleigh McKenzie, who was mm-hmm. one of your biggest mentors, and he was in his late 30s by then, I think.
16 years, yeah.
You retired fairly early. You're a young guy. We could still be trotting you out there if we wanted to. Packers could have used some help at different points at center.
Sure.
What was there a reason for that? Is there a different approach? Do you and other players at this time in this era of football call it quits a little bit earlier than maybe older guys who were trying to eke out one more year of paychecks?
Sure. I think it's an individualized thing. I think it's hard to generalize and say, you know, people are retiring earlier now than they used to. But for me, football was always just a start. You know, I wanted to use it to jumpstart, you know, my family and you know, my next career. The story's come out a few times, but I never wanted to play ball. It was never my goal to play in the league. Even in college, I told my high school coach, I got to find a way to pay for college. And that's what it was. I started buying lottery tickets my sophomore year. And just like, hey, maybe I won't have to play football anymore. But
did you ever get close to winning?
No, never. Okay. Never. I had three numbers. This is the best match I've ever got. So I stopped buying lottery tickets. Things went well for me. My dad always taught me, you know, if you're going to do something, do it right. So I always put my full effort into it. And it was after my sophomore year. I played my freshman year, redshirted my sophomore year, and I saw, you know, that was the year that Gabe got drafted in the first round.
Right.
Moff got drafted in the third round, and then Bill, who was the kind of the sixth guy, got drafted in the seventh round. And I was like, well, I can play with these guys. Maybe there's a shot for me to play in the league. And so, I put my nose to the grindstone and went in and worked and did my best to get into the league and get an opportunity there. But it was always my plan, you know, from day one. To be able to get out as quickly as I could. And obviously, I got a great opportunity, got a second contract. But even then, you know, I set that contract up so I could get in and out of that and be done. So I had actually anticipated retiring a year earlier, but I got sick. I had an autoimmune disease, and so I didn't want to go out not playing. So I wanted to play one more year, get back, and show that I could do it, prove to myself that I could do it. And then retire from there. So everything really went according to plans. I wanted to get back into tech. I double majored in computer engineering, computer science at Wisconsin. And I was super jealous of all my, like, classmates that I was working with. You know, you have, like, a group of guys.
So they're all jealous of you.
Yeah.
And you're jealous
like,
of them.
I got to go watch film at Purdue. These guys are breaking down atoms and everything else.
They all got super cool jobs at Facebook, NVIDIA, Uber. You know, they all moved out to Silicon Valley and did all these awesome things. And I was jealous of them at the time. I'm really pleased with the way that things worked out for me. And even more pleased that when I was done playing, I got to move back into tech and – you know, so for me to start a software company afterwards, it was a great way for me to get back in. I wasn't necessarily in all of the super low-level stuff, but I was managing all the developers. I know enough about it to know when they're telling me some stories or maybe not doing their best. And so I was able to kind of pair all of the leadership things I learned from football, all the work ethic, all of the, you know, processes and expectations, and put that into the business world and put that on top of the software company. And we were able to have some success there, and now we're just continuing that on.
So I want to talk a little bit about playing center, because I still don't understand why centers aren't paid as much as other guys on the line.
It's getting closer.
The work that's required and the intelligence that's required. But I have to confess, when Tausch said you were coming on and I went in and looked for you, I didn't know who you were.
Yeah.
Because the guy I remember in the NFL had quite the beard.
Yeah, that's true.
A, how scratchy was that? Was that and where did it go?
Yeah, it was not too bad. You know, there's like this like 1 to 2 week period where it's pretty itchy, and you got to get through that. And then once you're past that, you're fine. You know, it gets like pretty soft as well as you take care of it.
And were you married at the time? Was that something that your wife signed off on?
Yeah. I started growing my beard in college. Honestly, it was freshman, sophomore year, and really it came out of pure laziness. I just didn't want to have to shave every day and, like, take care of it, so I just grew it out. I decided, I don't know, about 6 or 8 weeks ago that it was time that my face saw some
– Oh, this is a recent development.
Yeah. My face just needed some sun after 15 years. You know, it was like it needs to see
low vitamin D levels.
That's right.
Get it going.
So I decided to change it up a little bit, and it's been great. My wife and I grew up together. We went to grade school together, and
you didn't have
to. She's known me from the beginning, so she's been very supportive all the way along. But it wasn't a surprise to her when I went back to not having a beard.
So, do you go to a barber, or you do it yourself?
I did it myself. Actually, the barber had something to do with it. I'd found a good barber, and I was like, oh, this is great. We're taking care of things. Everything's good. And then he moved to Vermont, and it had been – it was like a 18-month process to find a barber. I'm like, I live in the middle of nowhere. And so I was like, I'm not doing this again. I'm just going to cut it off. We're going to make it work. And so we did.
Makes me feel better about driving to Madison to get my hair cut.
Yeah, yeah.
Finding a barber, you're flying out to Vermont, get some maple syrup. All right, Travis, so you played center at a really high level, both here and obviously with Dallas. What makes playing center? What do you think? I always say the hardest thing is reaching a shade.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I got really fortunate was that was my best trait. If there was like one thing I was really good at, it was reaching a shade. And I even could reach a 2i, which is
show
not
off.
Very normal. Not very normal at all. And so like that was my one thing. We didn't do a ton of that at Wisconsin. You know, we ran a lot of power inside zone. We didn't run a lot of outside zone.
And you pulled a lot. That's one of the things everybody always talks about, centers, the pin and pull where the guard blocks and the center pulls around.
Yeah,
and
I got super fortunate. You know, when I came in my rookie year in the league and we were running more wide zone, I had a great set of coaches that had done it and you know, sort of perfected it and taught me all of the ins and outs of how to do it. And then you pair that with some of my physical abilities. My ability to turn my hips was always like a key for me, and my stoutness, if you will. Like I could turn sideways and cross my feet, which is a no-no in all things, and even if I got hit, I was okay. And I could recover off of that. And that was probably like the number one thing that made it work for me. But the nose, the reaching the nose is always hard. The other thing that's really difficult is just analyzing the play at the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. You have such little time to do it, and you're tasked with so much. And I got tasked with even more once they figured out that I could do it. You know, they were like, oh, you saw that? Well, then why don't you do that? And the quarterback doesn't have to anymore. And so it worked out really well with me, with Tony and Dak. We created a really nice partnership where I handled most everything that's related to any blocking and even some of the wide receiver adjustments. And their job was really to see the coverages, see the disguises, see some of the pressures that, that maybe I didn't see. But it worked really well. I mean, we'd sit in blitz meetings and talk. It was a very open conversation. It wasn't the coaches telling us what we needed to do. It wasn't the quarterback saying, this is the adjustment we're going to make. It was, hey, Travis, how do you see this? Mm-hmm. How do we want to make this work so that I can get the most time or we can make the adjustment, we can get the first down on third and medium? It was all of those things. And
so the coaches allowed you – were you sitting in the meeting, the prep?
Yeah. It was put together the cut up of what the pressures were and kind of have a plan of what they thought. But then it came into the group meeting where it was, you know, me and the quarterback and the other, you know, the rest of the offensive line was in there, so they knew the reasoning behind it, and the other quarterbacks. But that was the group that that decided how things were handled.
So when you're crossing your feet over and your balance is great, was there a point where the offensive line coach is just like, man, you just do your thing because this isn't how we're going to draw this up?
I mean, you know as well as I do, no offensive line coach is actually going to just give you free rein to do whatever you want. But they learned that they could trust some things and push the envelope a little bit farther than they normally would.
So from you've played center for pretty much the whole time. Mm-hmm. With the Packers, Sean Ryan is a young player who was a guard, kind of got bounced around a bunch, and now has settled into center. Mm-hmm. What do you think the keys are for him to kind of – now it's his job. He's got – what are the keys for him, if you're advising him, to really take it from being kind of a journeyman, figuring things out, to now you are the guy calling those shots that you did?
I think it's all about preparation, and I think it's about understanding what you're good at and what you're not good at and working those things. You know, you have to lean on the things you're good at, and you have to work around the things that you're not good at. And that self – knowledge and self-awareness is really, really important, you know, and as you move outward in, you know, things are slowest moving on the outside, believe it or not, even though those guys are way mm-hmm. faster, you have more time before first contact. But they always talk about guards, you got to throw your hands before you think you have to, because it happens really fast. And at center, they're right on top of you. So it happens really fast. So at center, when you move in, you have to be a step ahead going in. Like, you have to be anticipating the snap count. You have to be knowing what that person is going to do across and what they can do and how you adjust off of that and be ready to make those adjustments really quickly. And so that's the thing, is like, he's got to get really good at the things that he's good at and then knowing the adjustments and making sure that everyone around him is in the right place so that when you go to reach a 2-I and that guy crosses your face from the 2-I, which is not usual, your guard is there with you. Or is in a place where he can get past and you're going to be in a good spot. So you really have to prep all of those things.
And that's why reps with those guys are critical, because it's not as easy as just, oh, you'll figure it out. It's, I know that you know this is coming.
Yep.
That's when you can really become a group.
Yeah, I mean, I get the question a lot, like, Travis, what made you an All-Pro? And my answer is, I played next to Zach Martin.
Yeah.
that's how, you know, like, that guy's one of the best that's ever done it, if not the best that's ever done it. And I always knew where he was going to be. Like, there was no question in my mind that he was going to be there for me. And so that makes that go completely away. And so then whoever was playing left guard, which I had great left guards too, but whoever was there, I could make those adjustments and I didn't have to worry about communicating to the right, because I knew that that was already solid.
Is it vital, though, that you played the position for a long time? Like, I'm looking at, you know, I think back, and Tausch played with some great centers, right? Frank Winters, Mike Flanagan, Scotty Wells. The year after you came into the league, the Packers got Corey Linsley, who
yep.
was a multi-time mm-hmm. All-Pro and Pro Bowler. And I don't have anything against Sean Ryan. Sean Ryan, there were times where he thought he wasn't even going to be on this team.
Right.
They benched him during the season last year. And now he's got 9 games of experience. And all the stuff you're sitting here talking about, it's not foreign to him, but it's certainly he doesn't have anything close to the experience you had. When we talk about the offensive line for this Packers team, there's some apprehension in our voice. Mm-hmm. We don't know what Jordan Morgan's going to be at left tackle, but they paid him, but I still don't know how good Sean Ryan's going to be as a center.
Yeah, I think that you don't necessarily have to have a breadth of experience. You just have to have some experience. And so to me, the time that you learn the most is when you're not playing. And I know that sounds really strange, but if he had 9 games of experience last year and now has stepped away from it for a little while, that's when your body figures all of those things out. All that muscle memory comes from the time you're away from it. That when you start OTAs again and all of a sudden you can do something that you weren't doing before, or you already knew what was going to happen there, that's when you make your biggest jump. So I would expect that this year you're going to see a different player and somebody that has the experience necessary. Now, there are always going to be things that you learn over a long career. You get those guys that have played 13 years, and it looks like they're moving in molasses out there, but they always get the job done. That's because they know everything. Like, if this guy does this, here's the adjustment. You don't have to play on your toes. You don't have to be ready for everything because you already know what's going to happen. So that's where you get that tenured experience where it looks easy, even though it's really difficult. But after that first year of experience, that's where I think you're going to see that biggest jump.
I just think it's interesting because Elgton Jenkins is a really, really good offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And I talked to him during training camp last year, and like Kenny Clark and those guys were telling him, look, you are too aggressive. You're playing center like you play guard.
Yeah.
And that's why we're beating you.
Yeah.
And it just feels like those are things that you learned a long time ago, and Sean Ryan is still gradually learning. And the Packers continue to move guys that aren't centers, whereas Josh Myers was always a center.
Yep.
Now, whether or not you felt great about him, I understand. But, this stuff was all innate to him. All right, I before we let you go, I have to ask you this. You mentioned Tony Romo. You mentioned Dak.
Yeah.
What was it like for a middle of nowhere Wisconsin kid to play in Big D? And what was your career? What was it like to live and breathe the Jerry World experience?
Well, coming out of the draft or coming out of college, I was really stuck because I live right on the border, Illinois and Wisconsin, and so half the people are Bears fans, half the people are Packers fans, and so I knew whatever happened, if I got drafted to either of those teams, I was going to be in trouble, because if you play well, then half the people hate you.
Right.
If you play poorly, half the people hate you, regardless of what team you're on, right? So when I got drafted to Dallas, that was perfect because everybody hates Dallas. So then, like, I at least know what to expect when I go to the grocery store. But Dallas was, I mean, it is a first-class organization. The opportunities are endless there. And I think that there's a lot of training that goes into how to handle that because it really – if you wanted, you could be doing something every night. Like, you could be doing appearances. You could be doing whatever you want. And so you got to figure out what that balance is between football and you know, your brand. And I think that that's shifted a little bit with all the podcasting and all the stuff that goes along with that. So, you know, that makes it a little bit difficult, but – you have everything that you need. You have the support of the organization, and they will do anything for you. And you know, there's a lot of negative connotation that comes with Dallas,
right?
But once you've been inside of it, it's different. Like it's very much, I don't want to say us against the world because that's not the case. It's one of the biggest fan bases in the world, but it's very much you've been there and understand it, or you haven't, and it's not a derogatory thing. It just is, and you feel that support in everything that you do. And so it was a great place for me. I really enjoyed it. Dallas geographically is way more center in the country than you think it is. Like it's way farther north in Texas, so it's an easy flight no matter where you go. Like the long days are that one flight to New York or the one flight to L.A. But even then, it's not like you're flying from New York to L.A. You're still centralized. And so it made travel really easy. A lot of guys end up there. Even if they go play other places, they'll end up back in Dallas because it's just – it's a good city. It's growing. It's young. Even though there's like this big, you know, oil and tech presence down there, it is relatively young and growing, and it's a fun place to be.
So where you're at now – Bears, Packers is back. Tell it's a lot more heated than what it was?
Yeah.
I know you've been down to Dallas a bunch, but you've been here for a little bit now.
Yeah.
It's back.
It's back. And, you know, all those people that were detested for so many years as Bears fans, you know, down in the dumps, you know, but the –
just dejected, right?
Yeah.
Almost like they had given in.
These people are such diehards, though, that, you know, they always believe that this was the year. You know, we're going to make
until
it. Until
September.
Yeah.
Until September.
And then you don't. And so now we're here, and there's some refresh. You know, there's the new stadium. There's a lot of stuff about that in Chicago. And so, yeah, that rivalry is back, and I feel it every day in Sharon, Wisconsin.
It's just as incredible to me that when Rodgers said, I own you, I still own you, and Bears fans basically said,
they had to acknowledge
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he's right. Yeah, it's true.
Tricky. Just statistics tell us. Yeah. That's what it is.
Travis, awesome. We appreciate your time. This was really fun to catch up with you. You look great without the beard.
Thanks.
The mustache
thank you very
is
much.
All pro. But
that's a big-time mustache.
They asked me if I wanted a straw in my drink when I came in. I said, if I don't, I'll have it all over my mustache.
A savvy veteran move right there. We will have more guests live from University Ridge. Want to remind you, Gruber Law Offices partner with the Badgers with all of our favorite sports teams, but most importantly, they will win your case if you have been injured in an accident. So make the call. One call, that's all. 414-276-6666. 414-276-6666. 6666. Grubelov says, one call. That's all. More guests coming up. It's Will Dietz-Hausch.